everyone, and welcome back into another new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are bringing you more coverage of the New York City Fringe Festival, and today we've got part two of our performances at the Wild Project. The New York City Fringe Festival is happening April 3rd through the 21st at three venues this year at Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We have another full house joining us today. And in this house, we have the artists Shane Mayforth, Michael John Suzuki, Brian Dudley, Frank Farrell, Zoe Bloomfield, Matt Storrs, and David Rodwin. These amazing artists have all joined us today to talk about their great work. So without further ado, let's jump into it. Everybody, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Well, thank you.
Nice to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's so good to hear like the cacophony of sound just emerge from, you know, seven different people. This is wonderful. I'm so excited to have you here. This is one of my, if not my favorite festivals. It never ceases to entertain, enlighten, amaze. And I'm sure that all of your shows will live up to that. So I want to start by having all of you tell our listeners a little bit about your works. And Shane, if we could start with you and your show, Stroke of Genius, Pantomime Masturbation Throughout Performing Arts History.
That's a great one to start off with. Thank you. So the show is exactly what it sounds like, as absurd as that is. The title pretty much is the show. It's a mock intellectual lecture, college lecture, about a very, shall we say, niche subject matter. This professor feels very passionately about this art form and really enjoys taking people through the history of pantomime masturbation, going back from ancient Greece, really through the early 20th century. And sort of the highlight of the show, or one of the prominent parts of the show, are the filmed segments. There's nine filmed silent films by this particular art form's most notable practitioner, the Spankenscheister. So that's sort of like a through line throughout the show. And it's absurd and yeah, just a lot of fun.
I love it. That sounds wonderful. Michael John Suzuki, can you tell us a bit about Love Fool?
Happily, yeah. Love Fool is a very gay hour that bridges stand-up comedy and confessional storytelling that makes a starry-eyed argument for falling head over heels through life. It invites our audiences to hit the dance floor of our dreams and seek our own happily ever after. And it asks the question, will we say yes to a lifelong commitment to queer love and all of its abundant potential?
That is fantastic. Frank Farrell, can you tell us about Walt Kelly's Song of the Pogo?
Yes, thank you. Walt Kelly's Songs of the Pogo recreates the hysterical, imaginative, and wonderful world of cartoonist Walt Kelly. In this musical review, suitable for the whole family, Kelly's writings, songs, and comic strip stories are mixed with his personal memoirs. And it's based mostly on the book Walt Kelly published in 1956 called Songs of the Pogo. And it includes the popular tunes Go Go Pogo and Deck Us All with Boston Charlie. So we have a company of six actors who tell the stories, sing songs from the songbook, and it's just a delightful show. To quote it, it's golly, I go goo goo, going go go for pogo.
What a tagline.
We have to say. Thank you.
I love it. Zoe Bloomfield, you've got this show, The House of Clytemnestra.
Crushed it, yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so basically it's a retelling of the first two stories of Aeschylus's Oresteia, these first two stories being Agamemnon and the Libation Bearers. It's this weird mashup of a bunch of translations of the text, as well as modern scenes that have been written. And it's about motherhood and sisterhood and the way that we show our love and mask our grief, or maybe the other way around.
Very awesome. I love it. Matt Storrs, you have the show No Bones About It. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Absolutely. No Bones About It is about my lifelong love,
dinosaurs. Frankly, that's what it is. So it goes through the whole history of when I first found that deep, deep love of dinosaurs and my attempts to get my favorite dinosaur to be the state dinosaur of Arizona, where I grew up. And then how I kept going back to dinosaurs anytime one of my relationships ended and how it was somewhat of a comfort for me, but how sometimes things ended up being a little bit problematic.
That sounds awesome. I want to know more about that. That's fantastic. And bringing us home, we have David Rodwin with his show, Miami Madness.
Yeah, Miami Madness is a comedic monologue about the unmaking of a musical. It's about how I was hired to write a musical in Miami about a year and a half ago, and the musical was going to happen on a boat owned by a Russian oligarch. And it was going to be produced by a guy who sold timeshares. So, I mean, what could go wrong?
That is fantastic. So, listeners, as we brought to you the last few episodes, we've got six more great shows that we're going to dive more into. And this is just so wonderful. All of these works are fantastic. And I now want to ask some of you, what has it been like developing your piece? Ryan Dudley, can I start with you and the work Love Fool?
Yeah, so Michael and I have been developing this show for, I mean, some of the writing of his in particular dates back to like 2012, 2013, but we started collaborating on the show sort of in earnest in spring of 2022 and premiered it that June. And I mean, it's been, so we are partners in work and in life. And it's been a dream to make this show together. And it feels a little bit like the show is about love and the show is about relationships. And it feels like embarking on making it was an experiment. And if we could do this both as like individual creatives, right, which we both are in various different ways, and as people who also like live together and have to like pay bills together. And it's been really cool to like reclaim like queer narratives in that way and construct narratives about like our identities as queer people and our identities as queer people in relationship with one another. And it's been really fun, right? Like it's a comedy, it's funny. And so fundamentally, like it's a blast to like work with one of my favorite people in the world and just like make people laugh. Yeah, it's been a dream.
That is awesome. Matt Storrs, what's it been like developing your piece?
It's been a delight, honestly. Ever since I was a little kid, I was pretty consistently obsessed with dinosaurs and, you know, doing as much research I could, having encyclopedias of dinosaurs, learning all their names, everything like that. And then as time progressed, I recognized that I was going to conventions and I was going to the Tucson Gem and Mineral Show to see about buying fossils. And eventually I realized I took a step back when I found out that one of the people at that festival had been arrested by the FBI for selling fossils illegally. And we had like struck up a relationship and a friendship. And so I kind of took a step back and was like, I really got to reevaluate what my love of dinosaurs really means and, you know, the implications by and large. And since then, it's been a pretty insightful and comedic realization about some of the assumptions I had throughout my life about dinosaurs.
That is very cool. What a story there. Shane, can you tell us more about the development of your piece, Stroke of Genius?
Sure. Well, just like Michael and Brian, I developed this show with my partner, who also they happen to have a show in the Fringe Festival as well, Transmasculine Cabaret, starring Bull Bubba Boom. So it was an interesting experience. We've collaborated on some other pieces, but this was the most collaborative, I think. So it's in a lot of ways, it was amazing working with your partner and just trying to make as high a quality a show and as funny as a show as possible. Also challenging at times, because I'm sure everyone is aware, like no one can annoy you as much as your partner. So it was challenging, but ultimately this process and all of the things we've co-developed really brought us together, brought us closer together. So it was really rewarding and a lot of fun and just completely absurd.
Amazing. Love that. David, I would love to know, what is the message or thought you're hoping that audiences take away from Miami Madness?
Well, that's an excellent question. I think the answer is that everyone deserves a second chance, but if you give them the third chance, you're the asshole. So I give someone at least 10 chances over the course of this show. I was hoping you were going to ask me about how it was to develop the show, and it was awful. It was just terrible. The only good thing about developing this show is that I did not develop it with my partner, and she is very happy about that because she was the star of the last show, and she never wants to be the star of one of my shows again.
That is amazing. That's great. Zoe, I want to know the message or thought you're hoping audiences take away from your piece.
Yeah, I guess I'm hoping that especially like women that come and see my piece walk away feeling, if not like less crazy, at least comforted by the thought that other women are just as crazy as they are. And they're feeling and thinking the same things. I keep reflecting on like the community that was felt during like the time of the Barbie movie, all the women coming together and dressing up to see the movie and like celebrating this like feminine joy. I imagine like in a perfect world, all the women would come to my show in black and we would have this beautiful moment of feminine suffering and we would all just scream into the void at the end.
I love it. And Frank, what about you? What is the message or thought you're hoping that audiences take away from your piece?
Well, first, we want everybody to share in the joy of the wonderful world of Walt Kelly. And, you know, Kelly, for me, is the Shakespeare of the comic strip world. But his writing talents are not only found in his comic strip, and that's what we hope to reveal. We hope audiences discover Walt Kelly for the great writer that he was. So while this show is mostly based on, it has some comic strip material in it. It has memoir material by Walt Kelly, but also has these stories and songs that were found in the songbook, and they have nothing to do with the comic strip. So you know, I want to just mention that Pogo is the character, Pogo is the comic strip, and Pogo is the imagination of Walt Kelly. That's how I view it. So there's a lot to see in the show that people who know Pogo from the past will find new. And for others, it's going to be all new. So we hope to just share this writer with the world in a new way.
That's so wonderful. I love it. I had no idea about that. So I'm already learning about this. This is great. I'd like to ask all of you now, who do you hope have access to your piece? And Matt, can I start with you on that?
Absolutely. So I hope that anybody that has had a love of dinosaurs, whether it be a child, an adult, feels comfortable coming in and learning more about where your love of dinosaurs could potentially take you if you don't start having some objective thoughts on what your obsession might actually mean. And, you know, anybody that is interested in something funny and has ever had a little bit of an obsession that went a little too far, I hope you can come in and get some joy out of it.
Lovely. Zoe, what about you? Who do you hope have access to your piece?
I am super interested in not having an audience of Greek scholars. We're not telling an accurate historical piece here. I would love an audience full of people who mispronounce the title, who don't know the story at all, who recognize nothing, and who just come in wanting to be shown something they're familiar with. I think that the familiarity comes from something being just so universal that the historical Greek theater falls away and you're just left with these like true feelings that you have. I hope that the audience calls their mother afterwards.
That is wonderful. Michael, how about you? Who do you hope have access to your piece?
Queer people. I want everyone from a 53-year-old leather daddy to a 19-year-old non-binary textile student at the new school to come over and check out Loveful, because, you know, we talk about the infinite possibility of queer relationships. And those apply to all ages of queer folks. But beyond that, I'm also sober. I've been sober for 5 years. So we do tend to make shows that speak to the sober experience. Okay, shout out. The sober folks are sober curious folks. And anybody who's a fan of like thoughtful comic storytelling like that of Bo Burnham or Kat Cohen or Mike Birbiglia, or even weirder folks like Julio Torres.
That is fabulous. Wonderful, wonderful. David, tell us, who do you hope have access to Miami Madness?
I used to say I wanted everyone to come, but I really don't want anyone who I talk about in the show to come see it. So I'm not doing the show in Florida. And in fact, that helped me realize that really who I want to see the show is everyone who hates Florida. If you hate Florida, come see the show. You'll love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Stupendous. Frank, how about you? Who do you hope have access?
Well, yeah, I really hope that younger people will come by and see this and discover Walt Kelly. But we're also hoping that older folks who remember the comic strip come and see it. And then we also just hope people who appreciate music and singing come to see the show because it's a lively musical review. So those are the folks we hope come see it. I'd love for a lot of strangers to come see it, you know, besides our family and friends. It would be great to get the word out because I think the title is interesting, could attract people just alone by its title. We'll see.
That's wonderful. Shane, tell me, who do you hope have access to this very inspiring dramatic piece that you have?
Well, I'm hoping anybody that spent a lot of time in academia, the couple of times the show's been staged, had a few college professors come through, and I think that they've appreciated the show the most. But really, I think anyone that's a fan of absurd humor will really get something from the piece. And just anybody who thinks that, you know, not everything has to be taken quite so seriously. Sometimes you could just have some silly fun. And I think a lot of people can use some silly fun right now.
Oh, amen. Say it again for the people in the back. Brian, I know that you are also working with Michael on Love Fool, but do you have anything to add regarding who you hope have access to this?
I think he covered it. More broadly, I think if you're down to like think about what love means to you and you want to spend an hour thinking about that, that's what this is for. It's what all theater should be. Funny, thoughtful, and no more than an hour.
Interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to ask all of you my favorite question to ask guests. And that is, what is your favorite theater memory? Frank, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's a production I saw many years ago in Chicago and in New York. Nicholas Nickleby by the RSC Royal Shakespeare Company. And I was just blown away, of course, by the production, 7 hours with a dinner break. But really what I loved was that it was story theater. And they even commented that Paul Sills, who created story theater on Broadway, you know, he helped create this theater format called story theater. And it was very story theater. And my production of Walt Kelly's Songs of the Pogo also borrows from story theater. I was trained by Paul Sills in Chicago. I did several productions with him that were story theaterized. And so as a playwright, I tend to always lean into that, where I take a book that I adapt and I turn it story theater into a story theater format. My answer to that question is unbelievable. Two productions of Nicholas Nickleby that blew me away and confirmed that I was in the right direction of where I was headed in theater.
That is a fantastic memory. Who would like to go next? Yes, Michael.
Happy to. So my favorite theater memory is not too far in the past. It's back in 2017 when I saw the run of the Broadway production of the SpongeBob SquarePants musical directed by Tina Landau. I grew up on SpongeBob. I'm 30 years old and I'm a gay person. So all of that really shaped my sensibility. And in 2017, this was before I'd gotten sober, and I had sort of like lost my way from theater making, lost my way from comedy. And I was working this like dead end 9-to-5 finance job just because I thought it might be nice to make money and not be broke for a change. But I was really, really depressed. And we went simply on the fact that it was the SpongeBob musical and I'd been following it for ages. And I went with Brian and I went with my mother, the two of whom are also characters in Love Fool. And I was sat between them in the orchestra of the now defunct Palace Theater and totally overwhelmed by the sort of joy bomb that they had made in that theater and of that story and of those characters that sort of call on the most whimsical and joyful and like positivity oriented parts of me. And it just like pulled me out of this funk and this stupor and this depression and reminded me of like the gifts that theater can give audiences and the joy that like being absolutely unequivocally, uncompromisingly silly can afford audiences. And to see children in that house discover the magic of theater through something that is as intelligible and as colorful as SpongeBob reminded me that like we live in a world where like we're saturated with pop culture and we can use those things as tools to communicate really big lessons about like humanity and being wonderful to one another. And it brought me right back. And what, Brian, like a year later, I had quit my job and gotten back to making my first solo show, which is now 3 solo shows ago. So the SpongeBob SquarePants musical brought me back from the brink. Thank you, Tina Landau.
That is a fabulous memory and a fantastic show. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was, truth be told. And it was just superb. What a great memory. Yes, Matt, please.
So I'm tempted to say the Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville musical, but I'm not going to say that because it's not true. Something usurped it last year. I went to the Magic Flute and it was family night. And so as Papa Gino towards the end is going through his whole decision of whether and what he's going to do, the decision he has to make, somebody in the audience who I presume had never been to the opera before shouted at the top of their lungs, "Yes, Papacito." And everybody in the whole Met just immediately started laughing. And it was one of my favorite experiences that I've ever had.
That is so lovely. I love stories like that. That's so wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. All right. Yes, David.
So one of my favorite theatrical memories is of the City Company's production of Cabin Pressure, which very few people saw. But there's a moment near the end of it where Barney O'Hanlon is playing a stage manager, and we are backstage with him. We, in the far, far, far distance, see the play that they've been preparing this whole time. But all we hear is the stage manager whispering cues. And it creates the sacred space of theater that attracted me to the theater to begin with. What made me love theater was not watching shows or even being on stage. It was being part of a community that created sacred space, sometimes through silence. There is that moment before a show begins or the moment before you say the cue where something is about to happen that Anne Bogart describes as Joha Q. And there's that moment. It's like when you are on the starting block of a swim race and you're waiting for the gun to go off, that precious tension as everyone is waiting. And that happens backstage for me. And seeing that in Cabin Pressure reminded me of one of the most precious parts of theater that first drew me to it.
That is absolutely delightful. I love that. Great memory. Yes, yes, please, Brian.
Yeah, I'll go. Mine is also a theatrical adaptation of children's media. So sense of theme in Michael's answer, my answer. Speaking of the RSC, they did a adaptation of the Studio Ghibli film, My Neighbor Totoro, which we were lucky enough to see last year. It's in London. I think it's actually, they like remounted it this year. It is one of the most magical, I mean, My Neighbor Totoro is like one, I believe, the greatest film ever made, argue with the wall. But I think that the stage adaptation, I saw it at a time where I was like feeling pretty jaded about theater and just sort of like, why do we still do this? Why do I pay all this money to like go sit in the dark and like look at, you know? And it really was just some of the most inventive, thoughtful stagecraft that I've ever seen. Gorgeous puppetry. And again, watching children in the audience watching this show, I was like, right, this is why we do this. Because this feels like magic. This feels like something that you can't get anywhere, right? Even from the film, which is perfect, right? Like it just like truly like set a fire under the cobwebs that had sort of like pandemic grown around me. Yeah, it's marvelous. We also saw it at like 2 p.m. So you then emerge into like a beautiful evening. So there's like something about a matinee too that like really goes off.
That is a truly wonderful memory and a great shout out to a wonderful show. Thank you for that. That's fabulous.
I guess I'll jump in. One of my favorite theatrical experiences is actually a show that I was in 2019 in another festival in Cleveland, Ohio. And the show that we were doing was actually a professor of mine had asked me to be in this piece, and she is a Syrian theater director, and so it was a Syrian theater piece, and it was a beautiful play, and I was very excited to be in it, but we were a little bit nervous about the audience in Cleveland. And then when we started getting the word out there about the show, all of these Syrian families came out of the woodwork in Cleveland, Ohio, invited us into their homes, had us for dinner, invited us. It was 4th of July. They invited us to like 4th of July parties. And it was just so wonderful to find these people in a place where personally none of us expected to find them. And so openly be like welcomed into their homes and so openly be welcomed into their communities because they felt the importance of the story that we were telling before they had even seen a speck of it on stage. And then of course, once they did see it on stage, they were just so lovely. And the things that they said and the people they brought, they would bring like everybody they knew and they would see it three times. And it was so wonderful. And I just, the ability of theater to make a community show up where you thought there was none.
That is a beautiful memory. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Shane, I think it all comes down to you now.
I guess so. My favorite theater memory actually was one of the first Fringe shows I saw. This was at Tampa Fringe in, I think, 2018. Theater group Gumbo from Japan, they put on a show, Are You Loving It? I've seen it a couple times now. I've become friends with the company, and they're just amazing performers. And the first time I saw that show, my partner and I both, our jaws were on the ground the entire show. It just, as somebody who had wandered away from the theater for two plus decades doing boring corporate day job stuff, that sort of reignited that spark for me. And so that, if I had to like put a, you know, like a pin in the moment that I started down the path of getting back into theater, it was that moment. I think I probably, like, some part of me knew when it was happening that that's what was going to happen, because it was just so amazing. And then getting more involved in the community, the Fringe community, it was a done deal after seeing that.
That is fantastic. Wow. I need to see the show now. That's amazing.
You absolutely do. It's amazing.
You truly do. It's an amazing show.
I'm adding it to the list. Done and done. Thank you all for those amazing memories. Those have been some of the best I've heard. Those were wonderful. My final question for all of you is, if our listeners would like more information about your show or about you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? And Shane, if we could start with you and your show, Stroke of Genius, Pantomime Masturbation Throughout Performing Arts History.
Sure. On all the socials, you find Boiled Horse Productions or boiledhorse.com has links to all of the socials and all of the festivals that the show's going to be at and contact info and such.
Wonderful. Michael John Szewski and Brian Dudley, what about Love Fool?
Yes, we are on socials at XO Michael John, like hug, kiss, Michael John, which is what you can do when you DM me. You can send me hugs and kisses. You can watch clips from all of our shows, and you can find us at xomichaeljohn.com with more info about all of our projects, a contact form, be in touch, send us sweet nothings.
I love that. All the sweet nothings coming your way. Frank Farrell and your show, Walt Kelly's Songs of the Pogo. How can people get more info or contact?
Well, thank you. Everyone can visit our website, thesongsofthepogo.com. So the word the before songsofthepogo.com. On there, you can get info about our performances with the festival, but also access to our 8-episode podcast of Songs of the Pogo, which was part of our development for the show. So www.thesongsofthepogo.com.
Wonderful. Zoe Blumfeld and the House of Clytemnestra, what about you?
Yes, we are on all socials at House of Clytemnestra, but I'm going to be real. We really only use the Instagram. Like, the Twitter, I think, is just dead. And the Facebook, everything gets posted from the Instagram to the Facebook. So yeah, House of Clytemnestra on all socials.
Lovely. Matt Storrs, tell us about how audiences can get more info or contact you about No Bones About It.
Absolutely. So you can find me online at MT Storrs, MTSTORRS. And you can also find me on my Substack, which is Respectfully Yours, Matthew Storrs. And then my podcast, which is Mattsplaining. where I talk to experts and tell them what I know about their area of expertise and have them correct me. And we have multiple episodes where my understanding of dinosaurs is called into question.
Wow, I love that. And finally, David Rodwin, how can people find out more about Miami Madness or you?
Sure, you can follow me and everything that I do on all the socials at David Rodwin. And you can track Miami Madness, and I'm going to be on tour for 6 months from New York to D.C. to L.A. at MiamiMadnessComedy.com.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, for sharing your incredible shows and your incredible memories. It just gets me more excited about seeing your work. So thank you very much for that and for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks again.
My guests today have been several of the artists who are bringing their works to this year's New York City Fringe Festival at the Wild Project. The New York City Fringe Festival is happening April 3rd through the 21st at Under St. Mark's, the Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. And tickets and more information are available at frigid.nyc. You are not going to want to miss this year's festival. It's bigger than and better than ever. And this interview, this group of people, is a true testament to just how great it's going to be this year. So head over to frigid.nyc, get your tickets right now for the New York City Fringe Festival, April 3rd through the 21st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap those candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.